The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Thanks so much for all your texts, calls and comments coming in so far this morning. Hi, Greg. I just wanted to say fair play to you for the way you questioned the independent TD from Donegal on your show this morning. Like many others, I'm extremely frustrated. Before the election, he promised to stand up for Donegal and fight for our people, but now he speaks just like every other politician. You were right to ask why he wouldn't go to Letterkenny University Hospital with his constituents to raise real concerns directly with the minister. Instead, he avoided the question and gave the usual political answer. Thank you for holding him to account. Please keep pushing for answers. We need more of that in Irish politics. Terry, thank you. What does he think of a farmer on the Long Acre who keeps closing the gates of a disabled woman so she's unable to get into her drive? Both ministers, Jennifer McCarroll-McNeill, Fine Gael Health, and Jim O'Callaghan, Fianna Fáil Justice, have shunned their relative conferences. A new phenomenon, or what? Their advisors running out of ideas as running away from problems won't solve the issue. You're absolutely right, Greg. All opposition TDs should be out today to show their frustration, etc. Since Charlie Ward has been elected, all I've heard from him is Donegal is in the middle of the worst humanitarian crisis in our lifetime, which it is. During your interview, we heard it several times again, and the rest was repeatedly mentioning the surgical team. They, the opposition, should be out today, as you say, but the way politics is going in this country, there is probably an agreement not to embarrass the minister. And other opposition parties aren't going to be present for the health minister's visit. The Dáil is sitting today. Deputy Ward said that he's home in Donegal. Why would he not go and meet the Minister for Health? Is he going to go back to Dublin to sit in the Dáil if he doesn't go? We elected him to represent the people. He should share his views with the minister. Why don't the staff at Letterkenny Hospital refuse to have their photos taken with the minister today? That's easier said than done. And the staff are in a very difficult position and they are the ones working the absolute hardest. So I wouldn't put anything on them if it were me. I'm with Greg all the way. Our opposition and councillors should be up in Letterkenny today to meet the minister. Sending emails is a joke. The Healy Rays would be there. Shame on them taking the easy way out. Nothing will change in this country until we have councillors who will stand up for us. Greg, relax. One has to be impartial when presenting a show, but when you disagree with someone, you certainly show it. Let the listeners have their own view. Thank you. This is not a news bulletin. It's a radio show. And, that's just the way it is with me. I believe that I would be representing some of the views of listeners. It's not me, really. What Charles Ward does or doesn't do, I don't really mind. But I think there are some people out there who bothered to vote that might, and that's the view I'm representing. It is my style, it's not for everyone, and as soon as anyone wants someone else to come in and sit here and do it, that's fine. I will not hold the seat. Greg, I totally get your point. I'm sure the people involved in the surgical team effort would not mind for one minute a group of people, including opposition politicians, drawing attention to the defective concrete block plea. Nobody's stealing anyone's thunder. It's in support of the Donegal people. That comes in from Emer. Deputy Charles Ward needs to be there. He's part of the government. Another, we have a family wedding coming up and my mum needs to go to Letterkenny for respite. We should have fought harder for St. Joseph's. It's now that this service is gone, we realise how vital it was. My 90-year-old mother is going to a place where she knows nobody. If St. Joseph's was open, at least the staff would be familiar to her. The whole country or the whole county should stand at the Port Bridge and not allow the Minister for Health into the county until she sorts out the problems at LUH. It affects us all, not just politicians. Greg's right, the politicians should be there, not for photos, but to pressure the minister. What they are doing is not a protest, it's the easy way out. Another, the Redress Party was right to walk out of the meeting of Donegal County Council. No togetherness from other councillors in Donegal. It's crying shame to carry on with meetings or carry on with the meetings. It should have been cancelled. Shame on them for letting this happen. Re-DCB, I still believe that people would have been best off backing a party other than Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael in GE24 that could be in government to effect change. Another, hi Greg, the amount of people I'm chatting to that their houses are falling down and to rebuild their homes, they're out 40, 50, 60,000 of their own money. And this government has money for everything, but not for the Donegal people. I'm disgusted at this government. And that's, to some extent, seemed to have taken a little bit of backseat to the rest of the conversations that are happening in terms of having enough money to complete your home, Presumably it depends on the size of the home, etc. Hi, Greg. What is also important to consider is the fact that our mortgage contract obliges us to ensure our property is properly maintained, and any remediation requires lender approval and consent to assure future mortgageability. The government has let the banks off the hook on this issue. What way does it work if you buy a house with mica testing saying it's fine, but the house crumbles? Loads of houses are for sale for crazy money with mica test complete, but no test for the real problems. Lots of people will be caught out. Well, conversely, there are lots, there are houses that have mica that are perfectly fine to sell. It is a complex one, and that's where IS 465 comes in that hopefully it would clarify all of that. Because, you know, the property market to some extent is a little bit stalled because you have people with levels of mica in their property that can't sell them, but they've got no other deleterious materials, so the house is not at fear of crumbling. And then you also have this situation where a house might be mica free but is crumbling because of other issues, and it's often, isn't it, buyer be very aware. I'm not surprised a lot of property is not changing hands in this county. I really am. A reminder for you once again, Paul McLaughlin is in studio with me after 11 answering your gardening questions. As I say, we're into a growth spurt now. We're heading into May. Very little risk of frost going forward, and you will see grass is growing. And I saw a map actually that indicates how quickly grass grows. It's not a guessing game anymore. But grass and trees and hedges and whatever, you know yourself. And as well too, by the way, if you live in a flat or an apartment or you don't have access to a garden, you know, there are ways that you can spruce up your living space, even a small balcony or a windowsill. Maybe you want some suggestions in relation to that. It's not just if you have lucky enough to have a lawn, though, because we're in a rural county. A lot of people do have access to that, so which is great. But anyway, if you're on the top floor of an apartment block, maybe you want some advice on how to bring a bit of green or other colours into your space. Give us a call on that. 07491 25000, or text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Right, more comments coming in. Keep them coming in. Just an update, by the way, in case, and I might have suggested this a little earlier on, the ED has 12 people in it at the moment awaiting. What are they actually waiting for again? It's waiting a bed, isn't it, that these figures are? I haven't talked about them for a while. I don't want to misrepresent them. It's waiting a bed. I believe it is waiting a bed. Yeah, there's 12 of the ED, or are they just waiting? Let me double check that. I'm so sorry. It's just I've had a bit of a blank. There's 12 in the ED. This is the hospital waiting list. This is the trolley watch. 12 in AD, 19 elsewhere. So 12 in ED seems like a low enough number, considering, like, in Limerick, there's 33, University Hospital Galway, 25, Sligo University Hospital, 14, Letterkenny University Hospital, down to 12. What day is today? Thursday. I must check just the figures for last Thursday. I'll do that while you play the bingo. So the trolley watch figures, I just had a mental blockage. They are people waiting on beds in acute hospitals. And at Letterkenny today, it's 12 in the ED, and in wards or elsewhere, it's 19, bringing the total to 31. Last Thursday, just to be clear, I think it was 10 in the ED, 36 in wards or elsewhere. So the figures are similar. So in terms of a tidying up of the situation for the visit of the minister, that doesn't seem to be the situation, just to be absolutely fair and clear. Now, this is one that sticks in my craw a little bit, and that is the fact that you can be a certain age in a shop or wherever it might be doing the exact same job as someone else a little bit older than you. In fact, you can be doing a better job, but for some reason, you are paid less than they. Well, we know the reason. Catherine Walsh is Director of Policy and Advocacy with the National Youth Council. Thanks for joining us, Catherine. Good morning to you.
Thanks very much for having me on this morning. Happy International Workers' Day.
Yes, indeed. Government, you're calling on the government to abolish the sub-minimum rates of pay. So many people would be familiar with it, because we've all had the conversations in our houses, I think. But just remind us as to the way the minimum wage is currently set up.
Yeah, so the National Minimum Wage Act actually allows for lower or sub-minimum rates for young people under 20. So what we have at the minute is, you obviously have your national minimum wage at set, and people are familiar with that. But what people are less familiar with is that young people under 20 actually receive reduced rates of minimum wage. So if you're 19, you get 90%. If you're 18, you get 80%. And if you're 17, you get 70%. So what we had is that in 2022, a private member's bill was tabled by Paul Murphy to abolish these rates, recognising that age discrimination is not a justifiable reason for young people to be paid less wages than their counterparts. The minister at the time, Leo Varadkar, asked the Low Pay Commission, which is the independent body, to advise the government to review this, to have a look. So the Low Pay Commission with the ESRI did some research. The research was published in June last year. They completed it in March last year. It was published in June, as I said, making the recommendation that these sub-minimum rates of pay should be abolished, recognising that young workers deserve equal pay for equal work. You know, that these rates are discriminatory, they're outdated. And when you live in a time of cost of living crisis, when you've an increase in poverty, they're just not justifiable.
Yeah, it's really just strange in 2025 that someone aged 19 and someone aged 20 would be on different rates of minimum pay. I think sub 18, maybe there's a different conversation. I don't know. This is, though, potentially, especially with auto enrollment of pensions and all that kind of stuff, something I imagine would be greatly resisted by, you know, the tourism sector, for an example, retail. You know, they're already saying they're under severe pressure with costs. So do you think, Catherine, there would be room for the government maybe to make up the difference in this regard? Or do you think it should be down to business, or is that up to legislators to decide?
Well, first of all, just to say that, unfortunately, we know from this week, given that the government have their action plan on competitiveness and productivity, they have actually made the decision to defer any decision on sub-minimum rates pay, despite the Low Pay Commission making this recommendation. And again, while they are delaying, for example, as you mentioned, living wage and auto enrollment, young workers are still being paid less. So it's still a separate but urgent issue. So look, delaying the living wage is bad enough, but keeping some
my point is though, those opposing this will lump all of this stuff in together. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, it is happening, and we've seen it. And unfortunately, during good times and bad economic times, this is what's happening. Unfortunately, like, the argument that we will be making is that fair wages support everyone. It shouldn't be an either or situation. We need to be looking at, you know, workers' resilience. We need to look at workers' competitiveness as well. And what's really interesting is that the Low Pay Commission didn't just say, okay, we need to abolish these rates. The Low Pay Commission also said, now the government must also look to support the employers who may, like, in those sectors, whether it be retail, accommodation, food sectors, and say, let's support those workers who have a high concentration of workers, or the employers who have high concentration of workers on sub-minimum rates pay, and support them. But less emphasis has been put on that part of the recommendation. And perhaps if more was being done in that area in the last year, we wouldn't be at the situation where this is actually being kicked down the can.
The bigger the gap you make between being dependent on social welfare, an example, and working, the better. So surely it's in the government's advantage to make up that short difference for 17, 18 and 19-year-olds than perhaps it not being worth them going to work at all in the first place, or feeling disheartened in the workplace. And also to there can be a sort of a public misconception, I think, of minimum wage and what minimum wage jobs actually are. The minimum wage is at the point now where, and I think there was figures released on this week that shows that, you know, there's been a massive increase in terms of jobs available for people on the minimum wage. You're also seeing that at least, you know, a minimum of 18 months or 1 year experience required. You know, minimum wage and the jobs that are advertised and the hoops one have to jump through are not necessarily what people might think.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, while some of the jobs then do tend to be more concentrated in certain sectors, we are finding, and that ESRI research, as you mentioned, that was published this week, shows that there are, in particular areas as well, more areas where minimum wage jobs are being advertised, and there are more and more experiences or skills being required. And again, I suppose one of the arguments we also get against young people being paid the full minimum wage is saying, oh, well, actually, they have less experience, there's more training costs, but it costs just as much to train a new employee under 20 as it would for those under 20. You could still have a 30, 35, 40-year-old coming in with little to no experience.
I don't think that washes. As I said, maybe in under 18s, you know, it's your first summer job or something, you know, maybe I can see some logic here, but I know 18 and 19 year olds that work as hard, if not harder, and are more productive than, you know, people around them. You know, often maybe it just, I don't think your age an experience, really. Certainly in certain industries, I just don't think it's an argument that stands up. And as I say, that ESRI data shows that, because the bar for minimum wage jobs is actually rising, you could argue.
Exactly. The arguments for age discrimination have been lost. And we know that the Low Pay Commission in their report did say that under the EU minimum wage directive, that the age discrimination or the competitiveness argument or the cost is not a justifiable reason for the maintenance of these wages. And so, we would fully agree with what you're saying there. It's just not a justifiable argument anymore. And if we need to look at the argument, you know, if we're looking at equal pay, if we're looking at fairness, if we're looking at dignity, this has to be taken into account. And there's just no reason why just because you're 19 means that you should be paid any less than someone who is 20 plus 1 day.
Yeah, you know, and I would also argue there's actually no such thing as a low-skilled job. You know, people say that, but it's a load of nonsense. And maybe people, you know, if you're learning a trade, maybe, you know, hairdressing or welding or carpentry or something, maybe if there's some sort of a system there, I don't know. But, you know, a lot of these jobs we're talking of here, people are going in and hitting the ground running and doing a great job. So do you want it decoupled from the rest of the conversations, you know, like auto-enrollment, living wage and all that kind of stuff, and say, right, that's fine, progress that stuff, but this is a problem that's been around for a long time. It's kind of questionable whether it's legal discrimination, I would imagine. This needs to be worked on just ASAP.
Exactly. That's what we're saying, that, you know, delaying the living wage is bad enough, but these sub-minimum rates cannot be retained in existence. The minimum wage, the argument around the living wage auto-enrollment is that you'll be moving to a new process, a new living wage. But the minimum wage is currently in existence. These sub-minimum rates are currently in existence. While we're waiting for a movement to a living wage, abolish the sub-minimum rates as are. Let young people have the national minimum wage rates. And then as we move to a living wage, make sure that they're included within that system also.
Okay, listen, we'll see what the public think who are listening. Thanks, Catherine. Take care of yourself. Catherine Walsh there, Director of Policy and Advocacy with the National Youth Council. Again, my views are going to be influenced by the fact that we've got two boys that have just come through the 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, all workers, both workers, if you know what I mean. And, you know, you see the effort they put in. And this is no criticisms or whatever. And it's more going back a few years. It doesn't seem fair. So, as I say, I'm coming at that from that angle to put my hands up in the air. Deputy Charles Ward should at least make a protest publicly to the minister that he won't be speaking with her. What's the point of silently staying at home? He won't be getting my vote again. We voted for him to stand up for us. Another caller says, a complete cop-out. Not showing up serves no one. Ministers are not doctors. These visits are just photo opportunities. Good on you, Greg. That's the way to talk. Love your show. Thank you. I worked in the hospital when Minister Donnelly visited and they had extra staff working. ED was cleared that day. These visits are not true representations of what happens in the hospital. Now, the early morning figures, and they are early morning figures, and if anyone's down in ED and wants to give us a text as to what the situation is show that the numbers are the same as last Thursday, effectively. Now, there's an awful long time between those figures. What is it, 6 or 7 in the morning they're taken? And what the situation might be when the minister arrives. But if you're down there, be our ears and eyes, let us know. Our cadre councillors are walking out. Our TDs are running away. They got a mandate to represent us. This is not the mandate the people gave them. I expect they're drawing down the big salaries and pensions. Now, I'm just reading the messages as they come in, by the way. A couple of birthday requests. I normally do them just after 10, but I misplaced these. I want to say happy 18th birthday to Nicola French, who's in Drumkeen. Hi, Nicole, I beg your pardon. Happy birthday, Nicole French in Drumkeen. 18 today, Granny Pearl sends her love. Would it be possible to wish our mother, Mary Stevenson, a very happy 90th birthday today? Happy birthday to you, Mary Stevenson. I hope you're very well indeed. 90 today from Sharon, Kevin, Emer and Louise and all her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It's amazing. What an amazing milestone to really reveal. Mary would have been 10 when the Nazis were defeated. I'm not trying to bring the birthday down, don't get me wrong, but just to time frame it. Mary would have been 10 when the Nazis were defeated. That's a remarkable age to reach 90. And in fine fettle, I am sure. We're live streaming across social media on our website, this show, and it's available for you to stream on demand when you like. That's what we're doing, but what do you want to see everybody doing? Aoife McAvely, I beg your pardon, joins us now, Video On Demand Commissioner with Commissioner Mann. Good morning to you, Aoife. How are you keeping?
Great. Thanks very much for having me on.
No, it's our pleasure. Right, you're inviting the public to have their say in the future of public service media. So when we talk of public service media nowadays, what are we actually referencing?
Sure. Yeah. Like it is a really interesting concept, if you like. In Irish law, we're really talking about RTE and TG Cahir. Those are the two main providers of public service media that are defined in legislation. The kind of media we're talking about there is, I suppose, the kinds of, you know, cultural, sporting, events that are really important for Irish people as a nation, as an island, that bring us together. We're talking about high quality news and journalism, high quality editorial decision making in an era of misinformation and disinformation, as you know, more important than ever. Reporting or programming that brings the nation together, the diaspora together, and I suppose a showcase for Irish creativity and talent and a new culture. So it there's a lot of elements bound within that. And the reason that we're looking at the future of public service media is obviously, you know, the entire media landscape has changed dramatically, as you'll be aware. And we want to ask people questions about what sort of media do people want? You know, what do they engage with? Where do they engage with it? Because it's not always on television anymore or radio in a linear format. You know, people are podcasting, they're looking at and engaging with media in different ways. And also, does public service media at the moment really reflect Irish people and their views and who they feel and what they want to see when they engage with it?
The views are being sought by way of a survey, which we'll share on our socials here. And I mean, you know, public service media, is it for the 26 counties, the 32 counties, the whole island and its diaspora? I mean, who do you want to have an input in this?
Well, look, as many people as possible, I'll be honest. It's great to have the chance to talk to your audience because I think they probably have really interesting insights thinking about, you know, maybe media on a national basis, on a local and regional basis, might have views on Irish language media that they're receiving, you know. So we really just want to get as wide a range of views and opinions as possible. Love to hear from different age groups as well, because obviously the way maybe different generations consume media is quite different too, or is changing all the time. Definitely interested in the All-Ireland perspective. Commissioner Mian does have an All-Ireland view. And we do know that public service media can be really important to the diaspora. So absolutely open to all of those
because,
views.
I mean, some of the most basic stuff, one of the greatest frustrations for people in Northern Ireland is programmes being geo-blocked. You know, programmes not available in the north or competitions. Because obviously, conversely, at the moment, BBC Sounds is being withdrawn and it's only going to be available in the UK. And some people are questioning that at least it should be available, you know, in Ireland because of the Good Friday Agreement and all that type of stuff. So I can imagine if people are motivated from the north to take part in this, and they should, you know, that's going to form part of it, you know, actually access and inclusion.
Those are really important themes for sure. I mean, geo-blocking is probably a slightly different issue, but I do think access, inclusion, representation, you know, that diversity of views being presented by public service media, it's actually really important. And when you think about how social media can sometimes be quite polarised, what we want to do with public service media is probably quite different, and we want to bring those views together. So really hearing from different people with different challenges sometimes in accessing and engaging with media is absolutely important.
Editorial policy is another issue that comes up on this programme from time to time. Is that open for observation?
I suppose from our point of view, it's really about the independence of editorial decision making. So as a regulator, what we want to look at is, you know, for the public service media companies, what are the performance commitments they might set? So, you know, if people Irish people want a certain type of media on public service media, if they want to engage with media in different fora, you know, what commitments should we ask for from the public service media to deliver on that for audiences, and then assess whether they're delivering it. It's really important, though, that, you know, media, whether it's public service media or independent commercial or community radio stations, whatever, that they do have editorial independence. And actually, there's new legislation coming through from the EU, which gives us a stronger role in helping support editorial independence. So there's definitely a balance there, because we want to say these are the outcomes, but absolutely important that there's editorial independence in delivering those, and ensuring that, you know, we do have a free press and we do have, you know, high quality journalism.
And I mean, you know, people want to be assured that if an organisation receives 750 million euro of taxpayers' money, that the ministers who end up being on the programmes every morning or every evening, you know, are and I've no doubt that they are grilled equally to opposition parties and what have you. Also, you talked about information and misinformation. Another thing that comes up on programmes like this is, who's the arbiter of that? Who determines what is misinformation? So if a government minister stands at a plinth and says something that is demonstrably untrue, is there a role to, you know, provide a counter view to that? Or often it feels like what we're talking about is maybe someone saying about vaccine damage. I'm not getting into those points, if you know what I mean. But again, what our listeners often are concerned about is, you know, who's determining, you know, what is mis and disinformation, and how that is countered. What is the correct info?
I know it's a really challenging area, and actually there's been a disinformation, a government policy on disinformation was published in the last week, and we'll have a role in supporting that. And obviously, you know, there's huge different, you know, people can have different perspectives on the topic, but accuracy of reporting is something that's absolutely fundamentally important. And that's why supporting high quality journalism and high quality journalistic standards, whether it's in public service media or in independent commercial sector, is really important. And supporting public service media so they can challenge, so they can investigate, so they can hold to account, and also at times so that they can actually maybe tackle if there's been something disseminated online, for instance, where things can really blow up quickly. There's an opportunity for public service media to actually help tackle that. And I think particularly where there's trust, and that's hugely important around all media, broadcast media particularly, that people know, maybe if they've heard something, maybe they can turn on the television and see, well, what is being reported, or the radio, what is being reported by high quality journalists that we trust. And those are the kind of themes actually that we're looking for people to give us input on. The call for inputs, I should probably say it's on, and thank you for highlighting it on your social. It's on our website, www.cnam.ie, and it's open until the end of May. So there's a real opportunity for people to give their views on these kinds of topics.
Yeah, so those kinds of topics. How then does it inform change or not change, for that matter? So say, for instance, you know, I don't want to give, I'll just go with The Player, right? Say people say The Player's too clunky, there's not the right stuff on it, I wish there were more films, or there's too many ads, or I can't rewind or fast forward or whatever, I'm paying for this anyway. So they'll just pick something that's not very controversial. How then, say for instance, there was an overwhelming theme of that, how can Commissioner Mann then sort of influence that within RTE, for an example? You know, or as I say, I'm trying to pick a very non-controversial sort of example. The Player's fine.
It's a really good one around The Player, and sort of that point you were making as well about access and you know, meeting people where they are in terms of the types of platforms they want to, if they want to go online and they want that kind of service. So the types of areas that we'd be looking at is, well, what is RTE's performance commitments around technology development? You know, and as you said, there is a sustainable funding model now. They are receiving money through a variety of sources, and if they have the opportunity to invest, where are they investing the money in that kind of technological development that might enhance that experience? And we know they have been over time, but Space for More? And then are there other platforms actually, you know, if people are actually all on YouTube, you know, do they need to enhance their presence on YouTube, for example? Sorry, I shouldn't have said one, but
do you make recommendations then, or can there be, we expect a greater presence from RT on YouTube into the future? If you know, we'll use that example now, there are loads of different platforms, but like, in other words, can you set key performance indicators on this stuff? Is it just guidance and you hope that they might follow him? We'll come back to it in a year. I think, you know, we're asking people to engage 15 minutes of their time, and there's nothing, it's always important to drill down into what might happen with that 15 minutes.
What we're developing is this new public service media framework. And this call for inputs is the first step. And it's kind of helping us think about what sort of themes that we'll be looking at. Where we'll arrive with this under new legislation that's been published, the Broadcasting Amendment Act, is a framework within which we'll say, TG Cahir or RTE. These are the performance commitments. We understand people want you to be much more present on social media, on different channels. Mm-hmm. This is what the expectation is around your, you know, technology investment or your ability to actually reach the audiences on those platforms. We'll give recommendations around what's the appropriate level of funding if they need to make investment to do that. And then we'll assess their performance, both in terms of delivery and the reach that they get. Yeah. And then also the impact that has. Is it actually getting public service media to a wider audience? So that is the framework within which we'll be able to, you know, set the targets, hold them to account, but also give them, as you pointed out earlier, that independent approach for them to assess how best to do that themselves. Like, they're the experts in terms of operating their services, but they do need to be held to account for what they deliver.
Okay, and just remind us of the URL where people can find the survey.
Thanks, Greg. It's www.cnam.ie. So, Commission Namian, CNAM.
Aoife, thanks so much for your time. Take care. That's Aoife McAvilly, Video on Demand Commissioner with Commission Namian. Okay. Paul McLaughlin's in the garden with us a little later on after 11. In fact, if you have any questions for them, please get in touch with us. It didn't take the 100% Redress Party long to learn Donegal politics. The councillors walk out of the council meeting achieving nothing. Now a TD doesn't meet the Minister of Health again, achieving nothing. Will she even notice? Well, she'll notice the lack of bad press, which she'll be delighted with. Greg, I know the Pope's funeral was a week ago, but I was interested in how the media talked non-stop about his blue suit and nothing about why a man who was responsible for the death of a man was even invited to the funeral. Right, okay, I presume that's Donald Trump, isn't it, Greg? No, but he had a blue suit on. I don't entertain that kind of nonsense convo. Nothing about a man who was responsible for the death of a man was even invited to the funeral. Can you just... what I understand the Trump reference, the second reference I don't get. But as I say, if you'd have little to worry about if you're worrying about the colour of Donald Trump's suits. And then, you know, the crazy thing about the modern world now is... Donald Trump supporters then enhanced photos because there was other people in dark blue suits, and they enhanced them to make them more blue, and then took the wide shot and said, look, everyone's in blue suits. And then you've others that darkened them to make sure he looked like he was in a brighter suit than everyone else. It's the world has gone doolally. A caller says, my point on that is that people are using the mica test as a loophole and selling a house on it and no test carried out for the defective materials. Okay, brilliant. And I get exactly the specific point you're making, and I was kind of just referencing that there's big issues in all of that that needs to be sorted. Some people have confidence in buying a house. People can sell their properties and downsize or whatever it might be. We need clarity, and I take your point absolutely. And thank you so much for the follow-up text just to ram that home. Right, now, Oisin Harold's a transition year student in St. Columba's College in Stranola, and he joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, Oisin. Thanks for your time. How are you keeping?
Good.
That's good. Good to have you with us. Right, okay. Blue Star Accessibility Ratings is in the Nifty National Final in Dublin in May, and it's great. And we've already been talking to amazing young people with great ideas and what have you, and I'm delighted to be chatting to another in you, Oisin. So what is the Blue Star Accessibility Rating?
So, Greg, Blue Star accessibility ratings is a format of rating hotels and how accessible they are for people with disabilities. So people, limited ability persons who go to hotels, they don't actually know at the minute if the hotel is going to be accessible for them or not when they go. And the reason is because there's nothing stated on the hotel's pages if they're accessible. They don't give it in detail and there's nothing about it. So Blue Star accessibility, Greg, will go to the hotel, it'll view important things like the bedroom, the accessible bathroom, the leisure centre, and it will rate them, give them a 5-star blue format, give a written review on the hotels so people with disabilities can then say, this hotel is suitable for me or this hotel is not suitable for me.
All right, it's interesting. So we're familiar with the gold stars. This is blue stars, so it's easily distinguishable. Now, you came up with this idea off the back of your own family's experience.
Yeah, so I have a sister, Erin, and she's in a wheelchair. She has spina bifida and hydrocephalus. And we went to a wedding in Derry. And we did our research. We thought the hotel was accessible, but it was far from accessible. We went there. There were stones in the car park. There was stairs and no ramp. And we're at a wedding. We're dressed up nice. She's in a dress. She's very independent. And we had to carry her up and down stairs many times that night.
All right, so there was no facilities there for her. And the stones outside, that's, I presume, in terms of the ease of moving the wheelchair about and what have you.
Yeah, so the wee wheels on the front, that would be very hard.
Right, so also you've been looking through Donegal hotels as well and obviously been able to highlight some deficits there.
Yeah, so I've been to 3 hotels in Donegal, one in Balfey and one in Letterkenny and one outside. I won't name them because I said I wouldn't. And there's many common issues like disabled bathrooms not having the alarms, or every hotel had the accessible room on the first floor. I asked every single one of them, what would you do in case of a fire? And they said you'd have to go to the stairs. Of course, a person with a limited ability cannot go down the stairs.
And the first thing we're told is to, in the event of a fire, don't use the lifts.
Exactly. So how are they going to get down the stairs? And I asked one of the managers, what would you do? And you'd say you'd have to wait for the fire brigade to carry you down. Mm. I thought that was shocking.
Yeah, and this is a toughie, isn't it? Because how do you progress this? Hotels won't want a bad rating in this regard.
Yeah, exactly.
And the problem is, you know, all hotels in one area could be equally bad. And do you start off by giving everyone 1 or 2 stars? So how do you sort of get this? Are you going to have to upset a few people, Oisin, or what? How do you get this going? Or maybe set the bar, you know, for the first year, set the bar a little bit lower, if you know what I mean, so we can get to 3 or 4 star ratings and then review it down the line once it catches on.
Yeah, of course hotels won't want a bad name. That's understandable, and they won't want to be slashed. But hopefully maybe government bodies or somebody will take this on and say for a hotel to get a grant, they need to have a blue star rating. And if they have a bad blue star rating, they will need to get it up higher next year for a better one, or they won't get the grant.
But I mean, even off the record, I think if I was a hotel owner listening to this, Oisin, and I thought, you know, I'm doing some good stuff, but where else can I go? Or what else could I do? Is get someone like yourself in. And even if it's only for internal use, you know, get your blue star rating, find out where the deficits are, do a bit of work on that, get you back in 5 months. You know, if you have a 4 or 5 star rating, presumably 5 is the best, you know, people might reach out to you and say, well, okay, I'll ask you to come, give us the rating, and we'll put it on our website and use that as a marketing tool. Like we did hear, actually, it was a hotel in Ballybuffet recently, whereby a family landed at the hotel and their child had additional needs, and they were blown away by how understanding the hotel was and how it, and you know, and how they were accommodated. So some hotels are doing it well, others obviously there are gaps, but there is also a massive market here, I think, for good facilities for the hundreds of thousands of families that have someone with a disability or additional needs.
No, exactly. It's extra money for the hotel at the end of the day. And more business for them.
All right, so you're going down to the Nifty National Final. And I think, too, there's 2 things going on here. Firstly, obviously, it's a good idea, Oisin, but it's another opportunity to raise awareness. So you have to go down. Do you make a presentation? What way are you doing it?
Yeah, so the Nifty National Final is in Crow Park, and we're going down the 14th of May. So it's in front of 6 judges, and then there's a presentation afterwards where they'll obviously tell the winners. So it's out of 8 people. up against now, eight companies I'm up against, and it started at 7,000. Or approximately 7,000 companies.
All right, so you're one in 1,000 at least so far. I've no doubt in terms of the presentation, you'll boss it. There's no doubt about that, Oisin, and it is a good idea. So it's going to take a good company to beat you on this one, I think.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, well done to you. Anything you want to add before you go?
No, I like to thank Jane McLean. She is the person I'm under for the Nifty Donegal. Mm-hmm. So thanks. I just want to thank her for her help and everything she's done.
All right, well done to you. It's a great one. Thank you so very much indeed. Oisin Harold there. He's Blue Star Accessibility Ratings developer, and he's in the Nifty National Final May in Dublin. Another example of our amazing young people doing amazing things. You know, we had, was it the GWIDAW students in earlier with their, earlier in the week with their environmentally friendly dog beds, and we've spoken to so many over the weeks, and it's great. A caller says, let's give everybody everything they want, close down all the small businesses while you're at it, and we'll all live on the dole and handouts. What a country. Yeah, this is in relation to the proposals that the minimum wage should be for everyone regardless of age. Most of the time, it is a case of, do you want the job or not? As an employer, not everyone gets the minimum wage. Young people come in and they are just happy to get the work. Another caller says, you were discussing nurses' wages yesterday. There are different categories of nurses. Some nurses deserve different pay. I know of plenty of nurses who are away and won't be coming back until pay is changed. Yeah, indeed, that was feeding into the wider conversation there. Just to let you know that Anagri Tidy Towns are hosting a community cleanup in Anagri this evening at 7 p.m. It's starting at the hall. Gloves, bin bags, etc. will be provided. If anyone could do a bit of strimming, that would be appreciated, I'm told. Let's get Anagri looking well before the bank holiday weekend, they say. Have pride in your place.